welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for June 18th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me as usual is my buddy Jim Allen. How's it going, man?
It is going very well for us foreigners here in Japan, at least almost all of us foreigners in Japan.
Yeah, I bet you say that to all the foreigners.
I say, no, just to the aliens.
Just to the aliens, there you go. Well, we have an interview with Matt Merton this week of the Hanshin Tigers, and we're going to talk about Interleague and touch on a few other topics. So let's start clearing the bases.
Okay, well, had two chances to speak to Matt Merton, and it worked out. The second time was a charm.
So you saying you took that first pitch, and it was a strike?
Yeah, pretty much. I struck out the first time. It was a situation beyond my control kind of thing.
All right.
Anyway, so that was it last Wednesday. And so today, Sunday, we caught up with the Tigers. I went out to Chiba, the stadium formerly known as Chiba Marine.
The Q!
QVC Marine Field.
Just call it the Q,
where
the
Marines
cool
played the Tigers. What are you going on about there?
I said, just call it the Q. That's what the cool people call it.
I don't know any cool people.
Oh, thanks.
Other than you.
Oh, yeah. Really, really, really. Sincerely, from the bottom of my crusty heart, thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I had curmudgeon mode turned on accidentally.
All right, well.
Anyway.
Is there a switch I can hit?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, you have no access. Okay, anyway, so we caught up with Matt Merton. Now, Matt was the kind of the poster child for the Hanshin media the past week. A week ago Friday, he played a ball which there was a play on defense in which he had a chance to throw out a runner, and he did not for a couple of reasons. We'll let you hear his explanation of it. And anyway, for us and for the people who were not there to see it and who were not there to witness the whole uproar, basically a brouhaha evolved in the media surrounding his answers to a reporter.
Right.
And it went from there was no interpreter there, apparently. It was all done, the reporters doing the translating on their own.
Yikes. Yikes.
And it just got out of hand. It got way out of hand. And this was on a Friday. It became news. He heard it was going to be news the next day. I mean, he told me that he found out it was going to, that night, this is going to be news tomorrow.
Right. And essentially it was with the play where he was trying to get a runner at the plate. He made a poor throw, or inaccurate throw. And after the game, he talked about facetiously saying that he didn't like Nomi-san. And
yeah, that's what we got in the media. I don't like Nomi.
Right.
And I don't care if I give up a double. And I wanted Oryx to win the game.
Right.
So all this facetious, sarcastic comments.
That we talked about on the show, yeah, before.
We did.
And we were hoping to get this interview, and we were able to get it, which is, you know, good job to you, Jim, for getting it, and it was a good interview, too.
Okay, so anyway, so he goes on, he'll tell you about that and some of his impressions. I thought it might be very difficult to get to talk to him. Craig Brazell hinted it might be, because he's not talking to the media. And to be honest, when I asked about doing a story on this, you know, setting the record straight in English for Kyoto, he said, no, 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 please do not, because he didn't want anything in English that was then going to be translated back into Japanese and in the media again.
Right.
So, this is a Japan Baseball Weekly exclusive.
Good job, Jim. And good job. I mean, you know, I didn't think I was thinking along the same lines as Craig Brazell, that he wouldn't want to talk about it, you know, especially because it hadn't really been in the news so much the past couple, 3 days. And so things seemed to quiet down. You know, there was more focus on the Giants and the Interleague and all things like that. But yeah.
Since it's happened, he's only started one game.
Right.
And he had started every game between April 2nd and that game which he made the comment.
Right.
And now he's missed four of the next five games. So let's listen to the interview.
So what, I know, I heard the play, you're in the field, and you were not concentrating enough?
According
to, in your own opinion.
Well, in my own opinion, that was not an issue.
Okay.
You know, in my own opinion, it was a situation that was a runner on second with base open.
Mm-hmm.
The pitcher spot was still next. We were playing more shallow in the outfield,
right,
looking to try to cut off the run at home. And base hit, you know, to right. I fielded it, you know, like I would any other play.
Mm-hmm.
And on that particular play, there was a slight hesitation from my standpoint, in the sense that I took an extra step.
Okay.
And the reason for that was, it probably shouldn't have done that, but the reason was in that circumstance, I did not expect the runner to go.
Okay.
And most of the time they wouldn't run. So as an outfielder, you kind of want to just control your feet, make sure you throw a ball right to the cutoff man and kind of be done with it.
Okay.
Well, so I took that one extra step. They ended up sending him. I should have been able to throw him out at home.
Right.
You know, the guy was basically hitting the bag or right around the bag when I received the ball in right field. And, So, after the extra step, I saw the guy was running, so I went ahead and threw it home, and I threw it to the catcher, you know, in the air. I threw it to him, but I threw about 10 feet, 15 feet at the line.
Okay.
Okay, and so the guy ended up, we went for a sweep tag, and we missed him.
Okay.
So if I make the throw on mine, the guy's out by 10 feet.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I just threw it up the line.
That was
the best throw. No, it was a throw up the line, you know what I mean? And they said, you know, the guy shouldn't have run. Well, to be honest with you, in that circumstance, 99% of the time, when I caught the ball as of when he was testing, they wouldn't have sent him.
Right.
But they were gambling because the pitcher would be up next with two outs.
Right.
So they went ahead and sent him to look for a bad throw. They got it.
Okay.
You know?
The gamble paid off.
Yes.
Okay.
So really it came down to me merely making a poor throw up the line.
Okay.
You know? And part of that, you know, there was a slight hesitation maybe on the play.
Yeah.
But I never stopped.
Right.
You know what I mean? I never like set my feet and stopped. I kept my movement.
Okay.
Just it took me maybe another step to release the ball than I should have.
Okay.
That's all.
Now, when did it occur to you that your answer became an issue?
Well, after the game, they came to me and they said, listen, they said, you know, we're kind of concerned that they're going to use that tomorrow in the paper. I said, I really, you know, I don't see that happening.
Right.
You know, I didn't believe it, you know. You know, whatever. It was a circumstance where I just finished my last at bat of the game. A pitch in off the plate was called a strike. And then under my hands, I tried to foul it off. I put it in play.
Okay.
And I was frustrated. I was frustrated about that circumstance. And then shortly thereafter, you know, I'm in the tunnel. And one of the first questions is asked is, were you trying to get that guy out at home? That was the question.
Wow.
Were you trying to get him out at home? And I didn't know how to respond, and I wasn't too happy at the time. You know what I mean? And so my response was, no. No, I wasn't trying to get him out at home. And, in fact, I was hoping that Oryx was going to win the game. And on top of that, I said, you know, Nomi-san was on the mound. I said, I don't like him, so, you know, go ahead and let his run score, too. So I gave him three different things. You know, I was ticked, and I gave a little bit of a sarcastic response to what I felt was like a, you know, crazy question.
Yeah.
Of course I'm trying to keep the run from scoring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if you would have asked me, hey, what happened on that play, that would have been like you did. That would have been totally different.
Right.
But they didn't. They asked, were you trying to keep the run from scoring? You know, well, what kind of response do you want? So I don't necessarily believe that was the right response. Just in the heat of the moment at the time, I was frustrated with the circumstance. And I wasn't happy that we lost the game. And, you know, I wasn't happy about the play.
Right.
You know, all of these things are a part of it, and that question's asked, and I got a little testy, which I shouldn't have. So necessarily wasn't the right response, but I shouldn't have. But then what really bothered me was that I said that in English.
Right.
My translator doesn't translate it, okay, because he doesn't want to, you know, create any kind of issue. He just said, Jodan. It really wasn't a joke. I was kind of upset about the question. But he just said, Jodan, and then that kind of like made the people that understood English thought he was trying to cover it up. So they thought it was real, maybe. You know what I mean? And so then as soon as that was over, I said that, okay? And then I said, listen, but on that play, and then I told them what I told you. On that play, here's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, so after I gave them the three remarks that I, you know, basically saying I wasn't pleased with the question, then I did answer it in a professional manner.
Okay.
So I was hoping in that environment that they would get the hint.
Right.
write the professional answer and let the other sarcasm go. You know what I mean?
That.
Yeah. So it was a bad circumstance.
Yeah, I can't.
You know, in the United States, that never happened. You know what I mean? In the United States, the reason I say that will never happen is because...
If you said it in English, it would never happen.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
If you said it in Spanish, maybe.
Right, and that's my point. Is that you say that, they understand the context. They understand the question they just asked.
Yeah.
And they understand that that was out of frustration.
Right.
And that if they're going to write something about me, they also need to write that I wanted the Works to win.
Right.
They also need to write that I was trying to let them score. They need to write all of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And write the other part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they don't. They just pick and choose what they want, and that's why I was really disappointed.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to my buddy who writes for Daily Sports. He's a really good guy. He kind of explains the background to all this.
Right.
And one of the things he told me is that, and I kind of believe him, is that the reporters who work with the team, they know what's going on.
Right.
And they may write it.
Right.
But if you had told one guy, it wouldn't have been news. If you told two guys had heard it, it's now news because one guy can't write it and the other guy can't. One guy can't stop once two people have heard it. The people on the editor will say, how come you didn't pick up that story?
Right.
But it's one guy he'd ignore because but if it's two or three.
Right.
And it's not the reporter, it's the editor.
Now they feel like they have to write it.
Well, as soon as it's on the editor, this is big news.
Right.
And they're calling the reporters, get more on the Merton stuff, get everything.
Right. Right.
And it's not the guys who are here. I mean, although obviously asking a shitty question isn't really doing anybody.
No, and then there's also what you would like to believe is journalistic integrity. And that is...
You don't need long enough to know that doesn't exist.
Right, and to know that I've treated you very fairly for 2 years.
Sure.
I've given you plenty of time. Yeah. I always try to answer your questions, good and bad.
Yeah.
I do what I have to do as a professional because I know you have a job to do. And so out of respect, you know, and I feel like on some level you develop some level of a friendship.
Yeah.
Okay, now the biggest issue I have with it is that as good as I have been to them, the first opportunity they have to cut your throat, they do it. You know what I mean? And so that tells me that they're not, they honestly, this is just my feeling, that I no longer trust them. I no longer will talk to them.
Okay.
I'm not going to give them any more answers because I can't run the risk of them writing something that I don't agree with. You know what I mean? So now it's unfortunate, but what you would believe to be, you know, the 2 years of time that I put in with them, I can't give to them anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's unfortunate whether it was one, two, three of them that wrote it or I don't know who wrote it. And I'm not going to try to figure it out.
No.
I just can't, you know what I mean? I just can't deal with it.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Well, thank you, Matt. It's always a pleasure to talk to Matt. He's a very sincere guy, and it was it's always good to catch up with him. And you know, despite all the circus, he was the same. You know, other than being ticked off and expressing that actually being ticked off. I don't remember him ever saying he was ticked off. It was this same old Matt. And what you didn't hear in the interview afterwards, because I asked him getting through this, and he talked about his spiritualism and essentially his belief that things happen for a reason, and he was in a bad spot in 2008 and was in a position where he hated playing baseball and was dying to get out, was thinking about getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years later, he's a hero in Japan. So things happen for a reason. And his feeling was that, this is going to lead him somewhere better. It's going to make him a better person.
Well, if you don't mind me interjecting, I mean, it kind of came out to me in the interview. He seemed, just the frustration seemed to be spewing from him there.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like it was just the frustration about losing, you know, or the frustration over the situation in the media, or the frustration of, you know, in the past week not playing so much. It seemed like a combination of all that boiling up inside of him. And it seemed to me that he kind of sounded like he was regretting the situation that he's in now, whether it was because he signed with the Tigers or whether it's because he's only hitting 222 or because the team isn't doing well or because of the situation he's in. I don't know what the cause of it was.
No, I didn't get that at all. Of course, what you miss on the tape is the body language, and it was pretty much the same as always. He was very composed and relaxed, and thought he had a lot of time to think about it. And we did talk about a number of things. And as far as the context goes, I do want to share this. A a friend of mine who writes for one, for the Tigers paper,
mm-hmm.
the Daily Sports in Osaka, and is on the, one of the Tigers army of beat writers from the Daily Sports, said that, it was kind of a bad situation that has been stewing for a long time, and that it came out as kind of an unfortunate, situation. He said that basically the Tigers coaches
mm-hmm.
had been, picking on Merton in the media.
And by picking on him, what exactly? Well, pointing out his
pointing about, yes, pointing out all the things that he wasn't doing as an outlet for them, because they were unable to, in this person's words, they were unable to point out mistakes or poor plays by established veterans such as Tomoaki Kanemoto. Because
such as, who else is on that team?
There's a few.
A couple.
There's a few. Anyway, so that he was an outlet, and that this generated a sort of antagonistic media. Because once the coaches, you know, start picking on guys, they're giving free rein to the media to go, you know, to be antagonistic toward
right.
them.
Right.
We saw this in 2009 with the Marines, where the Marines front office had some guys in the press corps that they worked with to try to antagonize Bobby Valentine to get him to quit. Now, this isn't the same case, but that was one dynamic in this circus. And now another dynamic in this circus is the media that's going on outside of the people who are at the ballpark. And these are the editors. Now, of course, the reporter asked the question.
Well, we're forced to ask the question, right?
Well, the reporter, somebody asked the question. Somebody who's in this antagonistic mode asked the question, were you trying to get him out of the plate? Which brings the answer, no, I wanted Oryx to win. Okay, now.
Facetiously, yes.
Okay, now if this is, that's a pretty nasty thing to ask, but if it's one reporter and he gives a facetious answer, it might not ever be news.
Which is what you said in the interview.
Right. Now, okay, so what's happening is it's going on behind the scenes, and it's the editors, the people who aren't at the ballpark. So anyway, it becomes this wave, and it's all about the people and the fans reading the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that whole dynamic that's going on, and it's sort of like, it's so much larger than life. The team is, he said there wasn't an issue with the team. My friend with the Daily Sports said that he had offered through the team PR department to have him sort of publish a, you know, an air clearing, you know, I'm sorry this happened kind of letter, not of apology, but just an explanation.
Uh-huh.
And he had refused because he is not talking to the media at all. He's just completely said, you know, I can't trust any of you guys. And he really, and that is, if it's not, frustration over the season, as much as frustration over that one element of the game is now changed. And I think changed very drastically. Craig Brazell said the same thing, that he doesn't want to talk to the media either. Part of that is out of solidarity, but part of it, he's afraid that, you know, if Merton doesn't talk, he'll be next.
Well, but they'll bombard him with idiotic questions as well. And if he's talking, then.
Well, Craig, it's hard for me to imagine Craig not talking. He's such a gregarious guy, and he's very free with his thoughts, which is great fodder for the media. And he said, I asked him, does it take some of the joy out of coming to the ballpark when you can't, you're shut off from that little bit of self-expression? He said, yeah, it's not as much fun. But he's got to be careful, and I could say he hates to be careful about what he says. I mean, I know he is careful about what he says, but he hates to have to be careful.
Right, right. Well, you know, I just got that sense that maybe things are not comfortable for him now, and he's been glued to the bench, like you said, since this happened. I think he came in today, Sunday's game, as a defensive replacement late in the game. Was it the eighth inning or so? Or?
With two outs in the ninth inning. It was when Ryosai got his clock cleaned with a collision in shallow right field.
Right, and got carried off the field on a stretcher. Which that thing, what is that thing?
I don't know, but he was taken to a hospital in an ambulance.
Yeah, Yeah, it didn't look good. I hope he's all right.
Anyway.
But yeah, I mean, you know, the odd thing that I thought about this too in Matt's situation is that he's been put in as a defensive replacement a couple times.
Sure.
And this is odd because the incident occurred when it was in a defensive situation. And you'd think they'd bring him up to pinch hit and then, you know, let him go back and sit down. But, you know, they're putting him up.
Has nothing to do with that. And to the whole thing, and the person I really wanted to talk to, I did want to talk to in addition to Matt, was the manager. And Mr. Wada and I have always had a fairly good relationship, but I haven't spoken to him since he's been the manager because I haven't been out to the ballpark much, and he kind of looked like in the past he might have put his hand on my shoulder as he walked past, but today he kind of like, oops, he's talking to Merton. I'm just going to keep walking.
Yeah.
Because that is so weird because, you know, of course he's hitting So he's hitting pretty low.
He's hitting 222.
Indeed, 222, and it's...
He's not normal, Matt. He's not our usual Matt.
Not at the plate.
And that's why I felt like the whole thing was a combination of all these things, you know, the frustration of him not hitting so well.
I think from the team it is. But from him, I think it's not. I think A, he wasn't playing well, and B, the team was expressing their frustration almost through the media.
Right.
Which is what teams do sometimes in baseball.
Right. Well, yeah, geez. And you said it was, today I was looking and I was thinking of the Tigers and I thought, okay, finally, they have a game here where they're going to be able to win. They had scored a few runs late. They scored twice in the seventh and three times in the eighth, and it looked like they were going to get out of there with a victory, and they couldn't even hold on to that after scrambling back. And, what, Lyoto Arai had, like, the week of his life, right? This guy's never hit this much in his life. And
well, yeah. No, actually, he had another week like that last year when he was given some playing time a year ago in the spring, and he was
in the spring. You mean before the season started?
No,
March?
No, when the season started.
Because I don't remember the guy. Like, he's at, like, I think it's six hits this week, and he's only got seven on the season or something like that. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous.
He got some playing time, and he was dynamite, and then, you know, the big boys came back and they said, okay, kid, go back to the bench where you belong. And this is a guy who I think can play, but he's just never really had many opportunities. And in fact, I was speaking to his older brother, Takahiro, the other day, and I said, how's it like to play with your little brother? He says, you know what? It's kind of a pain. Because he can't really play. He doesn't have there's no playing opportunity.
He doesn't have a position, first of all. He's not great anywhere. I mean, he can do a lot of things.
He's really a first baseman, but he might be a better third baseman than his brother. Well, gee, John might be a better third baseman than his brother.
Well, don't speak so fast, sir. You haven't seen me go to my left and throw on the run.
Well, I saw Takahiro,
of course,
right?
We don't see how I do that either.
I saw him take a step to his left, fall down, and watch the ball go under his glove into left field. This is a guy who's a good first baseman. There's a bit of hit and miss in him, but he's game at first base, right, as opposed to a lot of the guys who shouldn't be wearing gold gloves. You know, just because they're dangling at the end of their bats that really do something.
Right. Well, it's just, you know, I think the Tigers are frustrating their fans. I think they're frustrating for the coaches. But I look out there and I don't really see that much, and I don't think they are a great team. I think they can pitch well. I think they can keep, you know, games close.
Well, that's what they have done.
That's what they've done, but they don't have enough to win them. And then even when they're in position today to win the game, their closer can't keep Lotte off the board for a run.
Right.
And well, they that, end up walking away with a tie.
Of course, that was tough, too, because they had about a five-minute delay while they were taking Asai off the field.
Right.
And then we've got two pitches, one ball, one strike, and bam, that's it, game tied.
Yeah.
And also, Fujikawa had some stiffness in his right knee or some pain in his right knee last Thursday, and he did not appear in a save situation at Cebu Dome. And, in Chiba, it was a wait and see. So he was available today, and he was in a save situation. It didn't work. He said the knee didn't bother him, he said, but he didn't think the delay bothered him, but who knows?
Yeah, and I think, the telling thing was yesterday when they really could have used him in a situation. They had Shinobu Fukuhara out there struggling, and they didn't bring anybody in, and they got away with it. But it, you know, I kept thinking, why are you just leaving this guy out there to lose the game for you? And he tried his best, but, you know, Saburo hit the ball right at the shortstop, so they got out of that game, and they won it. But, I think there's a lot of frustration surrounding the Tigers, and I hope it doesn't. I hope this.
Well, most of that frustration is just they're not scoring runs. Right. You look at their game logs, and it's like one run, two run, three run, one run, zero runs, two runs, one run, three runs, four runs. Their four run outburst against the Lions last Wednesday was their biggest scoring game of the month.
Yeah, I mean you can't take too much pride in saying our team batting average is higher than Yokohama's and Hiroshima's. I mean,
well, you know, Craig, no discussion with Craig Brazel is complete without thorough measure of disgust with the ball and the strike zone and everything that's bringing offense down. And he said, a few things which are true. Fans don't pay money to go to the ballpark to watch guys walking back to the dugout.
Yeah.
And
run.
They're throwing missiles at you. Okay. But the point here being, and I said, yes, and this is always two sides of the same coin. Oh, the Tigers can pitch, but they can't hit. Well, part of that's two sides of the same coin. Almost, if you can't throw a quality start in this environment, well, you really can't pitch.
Right. All right. Well, good luck to Matt the rest of the season. Good luck to the Tigers. We appreciate you, Matt, for taking the time to talk to us.
Okay. Yeah, Matt. And we will talk to you soon. And thanks much. And we hope everything sort of settles down and that the parent company has no more abuse from middle-aged ladies complaining about Matt Merton and their stockholders meetings.
Boom. The elbow from the little, those are the ones that hurt the most, you know, the elbows from the little old ladies. They look so innocent, but those things, years of practice, let me tell you. All right.
Years of practice. We're not talking about your aunt, Sean.
No, we're not.
Okay, good. Just checking.
All right, let's move on to Interleague now. It finally happened, and I guess congratulations are in order. The Yomiuri Giants became the first Central League team to win Interleague play.
Yeah, how about that? What took them so long?
Well, when they snatched up two of the best pitchers from the Pacific League, I think they put themselves in the driver's seat for this. And wasn't it ironic, or I guess coincidental, I don't know, that it was DJ Holton who won the game, a former Pacific League pitcher?
Good thing it wasn't, although it wasn't Sugiuchi can't be faulted for his game today. He pitched pretty darn good.
Yeah, he was. But I mean, Holton is, I think he was, on the news, they said he was 5-0 career against, the Eagles, and he was on the mound for that game. And, okay. They beat their brains out 10-1, so he got a lot of offense, so it wasn't like he was pitching a 0-0 game into the seventh inning or something.
Right.
But yeah, a guy who comes over, one of the guys who we talked about, who media talked about, coming over from the Pacific
League. John,
especially me, I think. According to you, it was more me than anyone else. But
I'm going with that.
But here he is on the mound, and he pitches the clincher, and they do it. They overcome all the Hawks didn't play that well in Interleague this year.
Yeah, that's very surprising because they've been one of the big Interleague teams in the Pacific League year in and year out. So that's part of the deal.
Yeah, and they, I mean, the Bay Stars have 8 wins, and the Hawks have 8 wins, and the Bay Stars have 2 more games to play yet in interleague, some rainouts that are going to be made up on Monday and Tuesday. So they can actually surpass them in wins. If they win both of them, they can even the Eagles. They can get pull even in the win column with the Eagles. So, I mean, that's 8th place, so I guess tied for 8th is better better than down by 11th, but it doesn't say much for the Hawks. And, yes, the Giants won interleague, but the next 2 teams, the second place team is the Fighters, who have another game to play still, and the Marines, who have another game to play.
Well, how's our overall scheme of things in the interleague championship? I mean, what's the overall record?
I did not check that. Actually, so
okay,
we're talking,
how many Central League wins did we have today? We had 5 wins and 5 losses because of the tie. We had the Giants lost.
I got it. We're even. We're dead even. It's 65, 65, and 11.
Okay, so this will give the Central League its second chance to win more games. Now, you know, this is pondering, you know, this is a good question. Is the Central League a better league? Is the Pacific League a better league? And it's hard to argue from interleague play from the results of interleague play that the Pacific League is a worse league when, you know, despite the fact that, you know, both leagues lose their share of free agents to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pacific League also loses more players to the Central League.
I'm going to say that the obviously the Hawks have come back down to earth after last year's incredible high that they reached.
But this is the same situation it was when Interleague started in 2005. I mean, the Pacific League has had more of a talent drain than the Central League year after year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
What took the Central League that in 8 years of Interleague, they may win more games twice?
And, yeah,
two years in a row, they badly got their brains beaten in.
Yeah, and that's not a lot because we have Yokohama representing the Central League in Monday's game playing the Fighters at home. And then at Jingu, the Swallows are going to have to play Lotte, and the Eagles are going to have to play Yokohama on Tuesday. So Yokohama is going to play heavily. They've got 2 of the 3 games, and they've got to win at least one of them, and then the Swallows have to win one.
Daisuke Miura pitched today, so he's out for the...
Yeah, the ace is gone. They still have a couple other guys, I think, so they could do it. Brandon Mann won the other day.
Yeah, he pitched the other day, so he's out as well. So it's good luck with Yokohama.
But, yeah, no, I don't know what took him so long. It's not done.
I just have to say that despite the popularity, the Pacific League's a better league.
Well, I think some of the things you talked about before, considering the travel and the method of travel and the...
I think that's an issue. And I think I think that is an issue. But it's hard to say that this dominance is so great. Of course, the other thing that I did mention, I was talking to a scout with San Francisco Giants the other day, John Cox, formerly with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned the study, I don't know if I repeated this, the one about the pitchers. The pitchers with the career wins.
You have to keep going. Yeah, that's not enough of a hit.
Okay. Last year, Shohei Tateyama of the Swallows said, because he does very well in interleague or has done very well in interleague. I said, "What's the trick? Do you like interleague or not like it?" He says he likes to play in the Pacific League parks. I said, "Even against you got to pitch against the DH." He says, "Yeah, because the number 9 guy in the Central League is so often an easy out." Then you can let your guard down. It's like throwing you're not competing for an instant.
Right.
And you have to dial it back up for the leadoff hitter. And with the Pacific League, even if the number 9 hitter isn't really a good hitter, you're still, you know, he's a position player and you think he can hurt you. So your concentration isn't on a wave at that. It isn't going up and down. So he said that was an issue. The other thing he said that he thought that Pacific League pitchers just develop better because A, they play in bigger parks, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
B, they play with a DH, which means they're not coming out of close games in the 5th inning because their team has a chance to score
mm-hmm.
when they're pitching well. They stay in the game as long as the defensive context demands that they stay in the game. There's no influence from the offense.
Which, mm-hmm.
These guys get to pitch more. They get to pitch more out of jams. They get to pitch more innings.
Right. They get to pitch late in games when they're a little bit tired.
And they pitch in forgiving environments because they play in big parks with and if you're with the Sapporo Dome, you've got a big park with a great defense behind you. So he thought that anyway. So with that in mind, I looked and I thought, well, if that was true, if pitchers who are in leagues with DHs have a better chance of developing, what would you expect to see? Well, first of all, you'd expect to see more pitchers among the active career win leaders playing in leagues, or at least developing in leagues where they have a DH. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happens. I'd say 70. I don't have. I did the study a year ago for a column in the Hot Corner.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's about 70%. Of the top 20 active winners in Japan and in the majors are coming out of a DH league.
Hmm.
Might have been 80% even.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, everything that he said is logical, and it totally makes sense. It's putting it in practice.
It's easier to develop young pitchers in that environment. So anyway, that was something interesting. It's always, and I told that to John Cox, and he said, what you said. Wow, makes sense. So that could be one of the reasons why the Pacific League is just a better league, and it's the DH.
Hmm. Okay. Well, taking a look at some of the leaders now, I mean, the Giants didn't have the best team batting average, if you can believe
right.
it. They batted .269, and the Marines had the best team batting average at .270, just a little bit ahead. But I don't know that makes all that much of a difference, because the Giants hit 22 home runs compared to the Marines 13. And the Lions are second with 19 home runs.
Mm.
Offensively, they did fairly well, but they 12 of those home runs came from Okawari-kun, and sadly, he was injured. He's got a left shoulder injury, and the report I saw said that the team said he could be, at worst, he could be out a month, and that they're planning for him to be out a month. Teams always say, look, we're going to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And it just sounds like they
say that in English in Japan as well. Even if they don't know.
Well, they sound like they're planning for.
They get some reporters to translate for them.
Oh, no, stop it. But it sounds like they're actually thinking that he's not going to be back in a month, to me. I mean, the way the story was written. We'll have to see. But that's a big blow to them, because they were already... I mean, he was just... Well, he seems to always get his swing in interleague play. He's got 50 home runs. I think he's all-time interleague home run leader with 50. So it's not a surprise that he was hitting so well with interleague. But he was starting to get his swing back in Pacific League play as well, it seemed. And
yeah, it was. That was the case. He said it was... I did not hurt him.
Yourself? Did you pat him on the shoulder?
I did not go near his left shoulder. He was standing on his right both times I talked to him on Wednesday, and he said essentially that everything was about his swing and his timing, that it had nothing to do with interleague. You know, he said, yeah, it's different, but the big difference is that I'm comfortable with my swing right now. I'm comfortable with my timing. And, if I see a pitch I can hit, I just take a whack at it and I think I'm going to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And he stopped swinging at balls. He stopped getting frustrated. You know, when his timing was off, he was swinging at bad pitches. So.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing how when you swing at balls in the strike zone, you actually make better contact? Oh, well.
Well, that's, no, that, well, yeah.
Generally.
I'm a big, you and I are, and this is one of the two or three things where we are in absolute agreement regarding baseball, is that, you know, it's all about strike zone. But, in his case, it's sort of I think what he was implying was that because he was missing everything, he was sort of his physical game was off, so his mental game kind of started to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then out of frustration, you know, it was, well, whatever works, I'm just going to start hacking. And I don't think that was a conscious decision, because he's a very disciplined hitter. But, you know, he was probably making his strike zone a little bigger by swinging at more pitches I should be able to hit this, or maybe I can hit this. And
I think so, because I see a lot of guys, especially in the big leagues, though, not so much in Japan, but guys – saying, hey, look, the first fastball I see, I'm going after it.
Sure.
And as long as it's not over my head or rolling up there, I'm going after it. And they make the conscious effort to go after fastballs. And sometimes they're trying to pull fastballs that are too far outside for them, and they're trying to pull them. And sometimes they decide to go with them, but they end up swinging at bad pitches. And when once pitchers and catchers see you do that, they attack that.
And
the good ones do. The good ones do it.
And it's not just that, it's the umpires as well, because the umpires have an affinity for your strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
What you swing at influences what the pitches they're going to call on you.
Yep. I didn't think about that so much. I haven't thought about that so much. I always think that the umpires have their own strike zones, and they adjust with pitchers who, you know, if a guy like Shunsuke Watanabe is up there throwing, well, you know, they're going to have to figure out what their limit is on low balls, on pitches that are low in the zone.
Well, that happens too. Sure, that's probably the easier one, because the pitcher is the biggest, the constant there.
Right, but I guess you're right.
Pitcher, the catcher. But it does happen. If they've seen you a lot, and they know you're going to, and you're swinging at a pitch, if you swing at a pitch, I guarantee if you swing at a pitch that's 5 inches out of the strike zone, 5 times with the same umpire over, you know, so let's say a week, or 7 times with the same umpire over, let's say you see him twice, then it would be almost human nature for a pitcher to throw that ball out there. And if you look at it and look like you're even thinking about it, he might ring you up.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Now, some more leaders. I remember before the interleague play started, I talked about how a lot of batters win the interleague batting title with a 400 average, and it didn't happen this year.
It did not.
No. Kensuke Tanaka of the Nippon Ham Fighters batted 367. He has another game, so he could push that up to maybe 370 or so. But he is the top batter at the moment. Nakamura was second at 342. But like I said, he had all those home runs, and it looks like he was the RBI leader with 32. Yep. He was the RBI leader as well. So a lot of good things for the Lions in terms of what Okawari-kun did, but he didn't do so well.
No. Well, they moved out of last place.
Yeah, they got up to fifth. They were 13 and 11. They were struggling there for a long time, but just 2 games over 500. I read somewhere that Wakui's sentence in the minors was over, and that he's allowed to come back to the first team soon, perhaps after this break.
Did you see that on Friday?
No, I printed it out. That's another thing I print. I like to print things out and lose things. That's one of my hobbies. I don't like to keep it in data form. That's too easy to file away and have for the show.
None of a challenge. You got to have a handicap, man. You got to handicap John because he's so far ahead of the game.
Exactly. But exactly. Yeah, congratulations again to the Giants. With everything dead even, 65 and 65. Isn't that amazing? 65, 65, and 11.
That's the way, I mean, most of the contests have been like that.
Well, that's cool. With these 3 games left, as long as we don't have a silly tie to throw it off, that'll be really
nice. Yeah, we don't have those two, I mean, those just 2 years last season where there was like one Central League team over 500.
Yeah. Go Bay Stars. You can do it.
You can do it. We had some great series. I do enjoy interleague play if only because it means that the Tigers are going to be at Cebu Dome where, you know, they're within shouting distance and teams are coming to Yokohama and teams are coming to, you know, the teams we don't get to see that often are going to be here more often. So that's kind of nice. I like that. You get to see players you don't get to see as often because they play out of town. So, yeah, I enjoy that. It's a nice break. A lot of the players seem to like it as a break. And the interleague format, I think, has gotten better. For those of you who remember the chaos, the first year of interleague, it was really a hash. I mean, it was a dog's breakfast, as they say, in a country where I am apparently an honorary citizen. And that
would be England.
It would be indeed, old chap. Don't panic, Mr. Man Wearing. Okay, now, What I mean by that is the interleague had a they always have a gap at the end of the interleague play where they allow for makeup games. And they had at that point the interleague makeup period started on a Thursday, and I think it ended on a Tuesday. And we had kind of a miserable weather that year, and there were a few makeup games to be done, but the day the interleague season ended was a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday was gorgeous. Saturday and Sunday were the most beautiful days all year, and there was no baseball.
No baseball. Yeah.
And what a plan that was. what a brainstorm thought that one up.
Who are the geniuses who came up with blah blah blah? Yeah, it happened.
They have gone from 36 games to which was a 2-6-3 game series against each team to 24 games to 2 game series against each team. And I like the 20. I mean, the Central League teams, nobody likes travel, but the Pacific League is like, yeah, what? So what? You know, this is what we do for a living.
Yeah, I just like the different matchups and everything. And again, I wanted to give a shout out to Seth Greisinger. He won 3 games without a loss in interleague play and had a 0.83 ERA to lead the way for pitchers.
Yeah, he was pretty amazed. And he had a couple of games where he was leading. And my friend Yasuhiko Yabuta was not kind to him.
Well, he's not picking and choosing.
Well, he's not, you know.
One for you and 2 for him. It's not like that, you know.
No, I know. And I know that. And he knows, you know, we all know that. Yabuta is not he's never been the greatest pitcher. He was a very, very good middle reliever for many years for the Marines. And then, he became the closer by default, and he's blossomed. You know, he had a career number of saves like 3 years ago when he saved 18 or something. So he's just like going on and on and on. He's you know, he'll be eligible for his pension before he starts slowing down, maybe.
Yeah. Well, he's slowing down a little bit, but Seth was on show number 10 from this year. And so, he's a friend of the program too, and we're out there rooting for him. Let's go to fielding questions. So, we got one from our buddy in Toronto. Let's play it.
Hi, John and Jim. This is Claudio from Toronto. I hope you guys are doing well there. I just want to get your feedback on 2 Dominican players that are not making too much noise right now, but I believe are doing a great job so far. One of them is the super utility player of the Sable Lions, Esteban Germán. He was supposed to be the leadoff batter and a stolen base threat. He didn't do well in the leadoff position, so he was moved down the lineup. And he already has 24 RBIs. He's the second most productive player on the team behind Takeya Nakamura. He has played 4 different positions and has batted 4 different spots in the lineup. I think he's doing a great job so far. The other one is the Trinity Dragons middle reliever Jorge Sosa, who has not allowed an earned run in 19 appearances and still has an ERA of 0. What do you guys think about them? And by the way, congratulations on the show. I'm a big fan. Thanks.
Okay, Claudio, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And cool MP3, dude. Sounding good out there. Sounding really good. Especially the way, I cannot say Esteban Germán. I can't say the names the way you say them like that. It's so beautiful. I wish I could do it.
You thought he was German?
I try. Oh, come on. That's so bad. I'm just going to look away. Self-preservation here. All right, so let's talk about Sosa. I've seen him a few times, and I remember picking on him on one of the shows, saying he really doesn't know where the ball is going. And at the time, I think that was safe to say that the Dragons were using him in essentially long relief situations, 5th, 6th innings when guys were pulled out kind of early in games, and they really wanted to get a gauge of what they had.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that he hadn't given up any runs, I think, is miraculous in some respects because he's put some guys on base. It's not like he's keeping guys off base.
Right.
But what I've seen that he does is, and he's gotten better at it this year as I've seen him in different outings. He's kind of the Mitch Williams kind of thing where he's winding up and he's throwing as hard as he can on fastballs, and he comes up with the same delivery and throws off speed pitches when guys are waiting, when they're loading up on his hard stuff.
Okay.
And he's been able to get guys looking at some called strikes, sometimes third strikes, by throwing those off-speed pitches when they're all geared up for hard stuff. And like I said, he's been able to repeat that delivery, and fool a lot of guys. And I think if he can find, I don't know what Gondo is doing as the pitching coach, with the Dragons, but I think he's doing a good job with Sosa, because Sosa has, the last time I saw, my buddy, what's his name, Maximo Nelson, he was coming out of the bullpen and he's been gone. You know, the Dragons, I have to say, they've been playing fairly well considering Yoshimi hasn't been there.
Yeah, he was there today. But
he was there today, but he hadn't been there.
Nope.
Kenshin Kawakami's been gone. Daisuke Yamai has replaced the MVP as the setup man. I mean, it could have been
a complete disaster.
This
is the team, you know. You know, the thing I love about the Dragons this year, and you know, I'm not a fan of Morimichi Takagi, but
I'm not either.
But that being the case, they are still the Dragons. You know, you just don't know who's going to be the starting pitcher, but you can expect something good's going to come out of it.
Yeah,
they're getting good pitching.
There is now. Sosa versus righties is the batting average that he's allowing is .276 and versus lefties it's .185, which kind of doesn't make sense. And his whip is 1.09, which is, you know.
Okay, how many batters are we talking about?
Well, I didn't look at all the batters. I'll look that up as we talk, but it's kind of high, but again, he's not giving up that many. He's not walking too many guys, so he's not getting hurt. He'll get two guys out. Or he'll get the first out, and then he'll give up a hit, and then he gets a strikeout or a double play, and he's out of the inning. So, you know, it's not that he's been giving up. He's not a handkerchief pinch situation where he's giving up base runners all over the place. He's using the bases as holding spots for tough batters.
Well, that's how it works in Japan, so. They teach you to do that.
23 strikeouts and 24 innings. He's doing better than what he did in the major leagues. I didn't look too much of it at his minor league things, numbers, but he's certainly doing better I think he's doing better than what they expected. Obviously, anybody with a zero ERA is exceeding expectations. That's
right.
That's for sure. So the problem will be when guys make adjustments to him and see if he can overcome those or not. Batters face versus right 72.
Well, yeah, okay, but what I'm saying is that if you're talking about 91 at bats,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean anything. It really means next to nothing.
I know. It's just that is the trend that it's going in now at this point.
Well, fair enough.
It's still. I mean, what has he pitched in? We just said 24 innings. That's not. That's not a lot.
I mean, however, you know, that being said, doesn't give up extra base hits.
That's true too, but I mean, he has given up some. It's not like he keeps
four doubles.
Yeah, four. Yeah, that's what I call.
No home runs, no triples.
Well, yeah, no home runs. Obviously, that would be an earned run. But yeah, he's doing well. He's doing well. I want to have more expectations for him. But we'll have to see. I think it's still early to say, hey, I think they're going to move him into the setup role. Although they did let him pitch some late inning situations the other day, and he did very well. So
he won the game.
Yeah, I can see him easily making more progress and being used more often. So we'll have to see how that goes. Now, as far as Herman, what have you seen?
I really like Esteban Herman. He's a very pleasant, upbeat guy. And I'll tell you what, he was one of the guys who I looked at his numbers from before he came to Japan, and I thought, I'll say two things that stand out. Two things, you know, first, the red flag is his age. Now, I can't tell you what his age is, but he's past his prime. But you don't see guys who are past his prime stealing 20, 30 bases.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was going to mention was I expected him to steal more bases. What did he have? He had, like, 471 stolen bases in 1,200 and some odd games in the minors. Was it the minors? Of the
yeah,
season?
Yeah. Well, okay.
I just expected him to be stealing more bases than he's not.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons for that is he hasn't been on. He hasn't been the two things he's done in his career is steal bases and get on base.
Right.
Which is a brilliant combination. Okay. One, he hasn't gotten on base a lot. Two, pitchers get away with a lot of you know, quasi Bach moves in Japan. So, although that's more, it used to be a Central League thing, more than a Pacific League thing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the, actually, I'm going to strike that. I can only say there was a large variation between the two leagues in that respect. I don't remember which was which, and now it doesn't matter because all the umpires are in the same group. But he's making some adjustments. He was red hot in the spring, but he is playing better. He's getting his on-base percentage up despite the fact that he's playing in center. He's playing at second. He's playing at third. I'm surprised they haven't had him catching yet.
That's the only place I actually didn't see him play. And I thought second base seems to be his best position because he played a lot of games there. And he's seen a lot of time at third, which I didn't think he was likely to do for the Lions. But now with Okawari-kun out, you never know. He might get a couple shots to play there, too.
That's where he's going to be playing, especially. Jose Ortiz comes up, they'll probably put, anyway, they're going to put one of those guys in left and one of those guys in the infield. And the other thing about him is that I asked him, what's the difference between, you know, your spring and your start after the season when you weren't hitting? He says, nothing really, just random chance. He didn't seem to think there was any big difference between the way he's playing then and the way he's playing now other than just, some hits have gone, went for him before in the spring and they're not going now and that was about it. So, and if that's his explanation, I'm not going to say that's the answer, but, that looks like the answer because his average is just sort of normalizing right now.
Mm-hmm.
This guy who, if he hits 275, he's going to have a 350 on base percentage.
Yeah.
And you can live with that in this climate. Yep.
Yeah, I agree. I expected, like I said, more from him in that respect. If they're gonna move him all over the place and have him playing in center field, and I remember Mike from Tokorozawa complaining one night when he dropped the ball in center field that was very catchable. And I think center is the one position that I didn't see that he had played a lot of. He spent a lot of time there. I think he spent more time in left field or right field, but mostly left. And, the ball coming off the bat differently, left-handed batters versus right-handed batters. It's hard to get the balls, and I'm not making an excuse for him. I mean, he's professional.
That second base center field axis is a – I think there's some sort of psychological genetic thing about that in Japan. I'll tell you, if anybody looks up the defensive careers of two guys named Koichi Ogata, what you'll see is two guys who spent their lives splitting between second base and center field at the same time, one for the Giants and one for the Carp. I can name you a dozen guys who are essentially second baseman center fielders. Takuya Kimura, Tetsuya Iida, not off the top of my head, but there's quite a lot of them.
Alright.
Quite a lot of, Kazuki Fukuchi. It's almost like there's a mindset in Japanese baseball that second basemen are center fielders in, I don't know, they were center fielders in another life or something. It's bizarre, but I wouldn't have noticed it if I hadn't seen it often enough. So Esteban Herman is experiencing that. I told him that I know he's played all over the world and now he's played all over Cebu Dome.
And hopefully he doesn't make a mess all over Cebu Dome. But,
Claudio,
thank you very much for the question and we appreciate it.
We do indeed, and keep them coming.
Yes, please send your questions or comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we will play it just like we played Claudio's on the show. All right, man, I noticed you forgot to say congratulations to me because I'm really feeling like a king these days, and hopefully my king's paraphernalia will arrive in the mail with no problem, and I'll be sporting it. So if you see somebody wearing LA Kings...
The reason is I stopped working at a paper where we care about sports outside of Japan.
Oh, okay. Well, good job. Thank you for the great interview with Matt Merton.
And thank you for all the hard work you put in every week that nobody sees on the podcast. This is John's baby. Enjoy it.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.